Hi, this is Brian Ward from Shout Factory, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Commander Kirby, the time has come. Execute Order 66.
There's nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I am, of course, TF2 and Mike. Joining me in episode/order 66, we are continuing 12 months of Star Wars, which we started 3 years ago, is none other than Mr. David Draper. Hello, sir.
Good. Execute episode 66.
That's my emperor impersonation.
Yes, very good.
I do a better Yoda.
Well, Yoda is going to be fighting. You're going to be having a battle with yourself in this podcast since Yoda fights the emperor in this movie.
I know.
So,
thank you, Steven Spielberg, by the way.
I don't know where to go.
No, that was his idea. Like the
No, I know. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because we need that because that was what,
look, the Star Wars films are not known for subtlety or symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it I know it sounds kind of goofy, but the idea of Palpatine literally using the tools of the Senate, those floating things,
to
it's very symbolic that he's destroying the Senate, he's destroying the Republic and trying to smash it. Like it's you know, you might not have noticed it, but your brain did. Yeah, particularly with the prequels, I feel like when there's actually something kind of good to point out, we should. When there's something clever or smart or well done in the prequels, it deserves a good gold star.
100%.
I think you have a career in films.
I completely agree with you. Out of the three prequel films, Revenge of the Sith is my favorite one.
I think Revenge of the Sith is everybody's favorite one.
I mean, well, look. There's only so much you can do with a young Anakin and a bunch of pod racing, and we hashed this out years ago now, but that stupid love story, make me puke.
Well, yeah, that was the problem, is that the entire prequels revolve around it.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, I understand George Lucas's idea of this is my chance, because he felt, you know, I'm sorry if I'm covering stuff that were on previous episodes, I wasn't here for that, but he really felt in the original trilogy that he constantly had to compromise because, you know, he wasn't like, you know, I mean, he basically had to beg the studios for the money, which he always resented. And he had to compromise to like see his vision. So he, I can understand wanting to do the films you want to do the way you want to do them. At the same time, I also believe in knowing your strengths and your weaknesses. And if you know you're not a particularly good writer and you're kind of weird and not necessarily a very people person,
mm-hmm.
And you know, like I can see it in his. I've done this writing stories where you just have like a blank spot of there's a fight here, there's a thing here that I, you know, they're on a boat and I really don't know about boats, so they you know, consult someone who knows about boats to like get me the technical stuff about boats. And his was love story, except love story was really kind of, again, everything revolves around this love story, and like if you're not good at writing characters that come across as human, get someone else to write that for you.
Yeah.
And I know that famously it was supposedly partially ghostwritten by Carrie Fisher and some other people. Get someone seriously to sit down and hammer that shit out and make it shine. Because, like, that whole movie revolves around the love story. Every decision he makes is because of his love for Padme. Mm-hmm. So, like, you really need that thing to work. Like, you should have put a little more effort into that and a little less effort into making, like, the CGI look right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're a writer-director, and I'm not a writer-director, sure, I write podcast scripts and I come up with crappy jokes and things like that sometimes, but, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But if you're a writer-director and you have other people to do the if you have effects people on your staff, let them do their job. Like, don't try to do everything yourself.
Yeah. Well, and you know, also you're in this weird catbird seat. You're George Lucas. Mm-hmm. Literally, you know, I'm not a big fan of romantic movies, romantic comedies, or whatever. But I mean, I'm pretty sure that in the early 2000s, there was a whole generation that grew up with Star Wars, and there had to be somebody that would have been like, "Ooh, you want me to write this movie for you? Hell yeah!" You know, like I don't think it would have been hard,
right? Yeah.
But I really think that was his ego. Like I'm gonna do my movie my way this time. I'm not gonna let anyone get interfere.
Mm-hmm.
And we got, you know, we got sand. We got, he hates sand. It's coarse and irritating. Mm-hmm. Do you watch Red Letter Media? The Plinkett reviews,
which I quoted earlier. I haven't in years.
Oh, the episode 2 one. There's this whole sequence about how Anakin wins over Padme's heart. You know, and it's all like it discusses things from the film, and then it either has like a little plus check mark go ding, or a little red X go bang. And like by the end, it's freaking out because he's doing that rant about murdering the sand people, and it's like bang, bang, bang. It's mm-hmm. hilarious. We were literally, and I'm using that word correctly, on the floor laughing the first time we saw that.
Wow. So it's been, like I said, 3 years since I recorded episode 1 and episode 2. I had forgotten that because the only thing I did in prep for this is watch episode 3. I did not go back and watch the other two.
I'm in the same boat. I remember them.
Why? No, yeah, no, absolutely. I remember them. My point is, what I didn't remember is that he wrote and directed all three of these.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I did not remember that.
1,000%.
Oh, George. Well, third one, and I don't want to say he knocked it out of the park, but there's a lot in this that I like.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always feel particularly like when talking about the prequels, I think it's at my Star Wars fanboyest, because you're always looking for those bits that were good in them. And there were bits that were good in them. And I think it's probably easiest for 3, because 3's a little more of the hardcore one. What's interesting is I watching it, I was surprised at, like, you know, all the Star Wars memes on like Facebook, because I'm old. Like most of those, like the prequel ones, come from episode 3.
Episode 3, yeah.
Like, you know, hello there. You know, General Kenobi. That's like a weird. People have a weird fetish about that thing. You know? And there's some other. You know, there's some good lines. There's, you know, I think it's a lot of people feel like it's the prequel that they should have started with and kind of skipped the first two. I think you needed like I said, you needed the love story. I just think it should have been done more competently. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be smartass about it. I mean, I think everyone pretty much agrees that that's pretty a weak point in a weak film.
Yep.
So this is like the last one at bat. It's everything falls apart. There's a lot. It's more action, less story, which I think really helped.
Absolutely, it does help, because Mighty Casey did not strike out here. I don't think there are things about this film that, but they're not as. I swear, if I see them on that field one more time, I'm gonna light that movie on fire. But the third movie, yeah, no, absolutely. The action, like, I wanted to do a count of this, but I lost count. I wanted to count how many times Obi-Wan's transportation on Utapau, you'll know what the animal's name is, because you're...
It's like a Vactyl Raptor or something.
Okay, whatever. Source. Well, whatever
look, it's been a long, long time.
Yeah,
like,
Yeah, whatever it is. Every time that thing made noise, every time that thing cried out, I wanted to keep a counter. I lost count. But the action on Utapau, where the movie comes in, where Anakin is, where Obi-Wan is, like at the end, and I know I'm jumping ahead here, but everybody knows this movie now.
These movies are 20 years old.
Yeah. So... at the end, when you know, you said earlier, you know, about, I have the hug, you know, you were my brother, Anakin, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, brother? Huh? How? you were, Obi-Wan was maybe 16, 17 when Anakin was 10. That's
you can have a look. First of all, it was a little more metaphorical, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can have like my uncle is like I don't know the age range, mm-hmm. but I know that my uncle is basically kind of like an only child because my mom and her other brother and her sister were teenagers when he was born.
Okay.
So, you know, it happens.
Yeah, no, it's just
and I think it was more like, you know, even though he was like, you have older brothers in a mentoring role, like, because mm-hmm. he was kind of his teacher too. So it was like, yeah. You know, they fought together. Brother, I think in that sense means more like comrade in arms, like band of brothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And we did see in this movie and the other two movies. Well, the other
a little one. Bit in this movie and a little bit in the other two movies.
Yeah,
that's why the. As much as I'm disappointed in Dave Filoni these days, what makes the Clone Wars great and useful is that it really fixes the issue with the movies, which is that we see them as friends. We see them. We see that relationship. We see those characters as characters so that when we come to this movie, like if you did it in order, like, mm-hmm. you know, watching Attack of the Clones and then the Clone Wars movie, the show, and then this show. Well, first of all, you'd be like, where's Ahsoka? But second of all, well, no, you wouldn't know where Ahsoka is. Like, no, you wouldn't. Because it starts, any point being,
yep.
it fleshes everybody out. Like,
yeah.
You would get the sense that they were brothers. You know, like, it develops them in a way that the movie just kind of, the movies are very bad about telling, not showing, particularly in human relationships.
Yeah.
Which is not George's thing, which is fine, because it's not really my thing either. But, you know, I'm not writing movies.
Well, and the other thing is, movies are most movies, unless they're 3-hour bat sparklers. Movies are, let's say, 90 minutes to 2.5 hour. Like a good movie length is anywhere from 90. Me personally, this is just my personal opinion. 90 minutes to 2.5 hours, somewhere around there. That's a good movie time length, and it's finite. You have to fit what you can fit into that, and you are absolutely correct. That's why, not necessarily that's why Clone Wars was a thing, but the animated series of anything, not just Star Wars. If you got a cartoon and you want to tell a story, you got, as long as you have 65 episodes or whatever for syndication, go ahead, tell that story. And you are right. I really did enjoy the Clone Wars. I did enjoy seeing them flesh all of that Obi-Wan Anakin stuff out.
Well, but I don't think that's... I think it retroactively made things better, but I don't think that's an excuse or a defense for the films that got made. You can tell a story with characters in 2.5 hours. You can tell a story with characters in 90 minutes. Yep. Like, it's all about what you... Part of it is the direction, because Lucas isn't a particularly good director. You know, Lucas is good at... The thing is, I feel bad slamming Lucas, because everybody has, but Lucas is good at what he's good at, and he's not good at what he's not good at, and directing is not one of his strong suits.
Yeah.
Because, again, people person. But, you know, I mean, if you watch the Plinkett review of Episode 3, he's, like, behind this bank of monitors over here in the corner sipping his coffee when he's directing. You know, he's not sitting by the camera. He's not interacting with the actors. He's kind of off by himself. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that he focuses on in these movies that don't need to be there. Like the one that's coming to mind now is from Episode 2, which I know we're not supposed to talk about, but
it's okay.
Like the droid factory scene where 3PO is hanging on the giant thing flying through the factory and none of that needed to be in there. We could have developed characters like movies. In particular, I think more so than any other media, like, you got to get in, do your job, and get out, and there's very little fat on the bone. Like,
yep.
And you need the actors to carry you. You need everybody working together, pulling together to carry a movie, because that's one of the reasons I think you feel that way about the length of a movie, and I kind of agree, is because when these movies are 3 hours long, that means the director can, like, have this little thing that goes on forever and doesn't pay off, and this little thing, and this, you know, you got to be tight and concise, like, in a way that, like, TV shows can take an episode and develop Worf or Troy, right? Like, they can do that. And then, but in the movie, everybody's got to do their thing and get in, get out. You know, books can take forever. Like, anything else can take forever and waste time because, but movies, you've only got so much time and then it's done. And usually, like, Star Wars is in a unique position, particularly after Empire, I think, where, yeah, you were going to get the next one, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were going to get a sequel to Empire. Yeah, you know, there'll be another movie, but most movies aren't like that. Most movies aren't, like, you got to tell your story and be done with it. That's why most horror movie sequels are so annoying, because, like, it's you know, we've resolved the situation, and now there's another shark. Freddy comes back. There's another terrorist attack somewhere that John McClane stumbles in. There's always, you know...
Yep.
You know, it's always got to dig everything back up again and not build on it. Like, the good sequels build on what came before. The bad sequels just sort of, like, find a cheap way to resurrect it.
Yep. So did you see this in theaters?
Oh, yeah. This is the only one... So I'm a toy nerd, and with the prequels, I actually, like, I did the midnight thing for the toys for the first two movies. And I saw them. I saw the movies the day after they opened. Like, the day they opened, but not, like, the midnight things. This is the only one I saw the midnight thing for.
Very cool.
And then I did the toy thing the day after, actually.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, back then in 2005, somebody sent me it from somewhere. I didn't go to a theater. I was at home.
I actually still have my... I don't have any of my tickets for the original trilogy, which makes me sad. But I do have all my prequel tickets.
Awesome. I remember I was 19 when Menace came out. I got a ticket around here in one of my boxes still, because I used to, you know, all movie stubs. It's like
I have a drawer on a desk like that. I'm sentimental about crap like that.
I used to be until I like moved like 5 million times. I'm just I can't keep up with this crap anymore. I didn't throw it away, but I didn't like actively keep up with it, kind of thing. And now I just don't go to the movies. I'll wait until it comes on video on demand or Disney Plus or whatever. What is it about Episode 3 that kind of was off-putting for you?
I mean, the direction, the dialogue. You know, the dialogue is classic Lucas dialogue. The direction is very flat. But again, you got to go into this, realize, like, 90% of the problem is people don't understand. And they shouldn't have to. Like, let me be clear. You shouldn't have to understand George Lucas and his motivations. That should come through the movie. But, like, he's doing a tribute to a certain kind of movie that he grew up with. Mm-hmm. It had a certain kind of style. It was very flat and melodramatic. It was flat but melodramatic. It was not naturalistic, you know? It wasn't like a 70s kind of naturalistic method acting. It was very flat and very dramatic and very stagey. And he's directing it deliberately that way, which, as a member of a modern audience, doesn't work for me, you know? Just... most of Padme's dialogue is terrible. And the other thing is, nothing was ever explained. This is the flaw of the prequels as a whole, including the third one, is that we know now, mostly because Lucas has told us now, that Anakin's prophecy was about he was supposed to bring balance to the Force by eliminating both the Jedi and the Sith. Okay, Lucas told us this now. Like, that's not in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, and then the question becomes, why do the Jedi need to be taken out of the equation? And I think Lucas is saying that the Jedi were flawed and broken, and that they had lost their way. This is me reading into it. Like, this yeah. is there. I mean, well, there's one line of dialogue in Attack of the Clones, Attack of the Clones, where Yoda kind of offhand says, oh, these young Jedi these days. But there's nothing really there. And part of the problem is we as the audience have been trained by the original films to see the Jedi as good guy. I mean, we've listened to Obi-Wan and we've listened to Yoda and we think that the Jedi are good and pure. And so the idea that we need to take these guys out, like, it's weird. It doesn't click with us. It doesn't resonate. And then the Jedi themselves are weird, where they're in this weird sexless cult. And it's all very, you know, they're basically kind of kidnapped as babies. And it's all very weird. And none of it is explained. We never hear the actual words of the prophecy, you know. Yeah. There's none of this. I think that's the story he's telling, but there's none of it in the film. That's why there's a scene in Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett, like when Luke makes Yoda or makes Grogu choose. Mm-hmm. That made me sad. It broke my heart because he's doing the Jedi thing, and I'm pretty sure the prequels were about the Jedi were flawed, and mm-hmm. Luke needed to start a new thing. Like, and he was a new hope. He wasn't rebuilding the old. He was creating the new. But yeah. He's making the same mistakes that the old Jedi made. And I almost wonder, I mean, given the way that they're doing it, I wonder if that was deliberate, because now it's supposed to be Rey who's the bestest, wonderfulest of all, and she's going to create the new thing that's better than everything. No. But, you know, like, it's a flaw. It's a huge flaw of the film that we as the audience don't understand this really important thing that's going on in front of us.
Yeah.
That the Jedi need to be wiped out, and we don't know why, and we're bothered by it.
Yep. So 10 podcast episodes from now, in episode 77, Dave and I will be talking about Star Wars. Originally, it was called Star Wars. I know it's episode 4, A New Hope now, with this whole continuity thing and whatever else, but...
Do anything but the most uber of nerds call it A New Hope? Like,
I don't know.
I don't know. I was 6 years old in 77. It's Star Wars. It'll always be Star Wars. Like, if mm-hmm. If you're talking about all the movies, maybe you'll say episode 4, A New Hope. But mm-hmm. like, it's Star Wars. Like, just calm down.
Yeah, no.
Not you. But I mean, like, other people get really like, it's A New Hope. Like, no, it's Star Wars. That was the name of the movie.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I, as a kid and growing up, so I was, it was probably a decade, I didn't see Star Wars till I was 7 or 8 years old, 87, 88, so it was a decade after it was in theaters, and I just even then, as a child, I wanted more out of that original film. I wanted, like you mentioned a few moments ago about Ben, Obi-Wan talking about the old days and the this and the that, and your father was the... I'm like, okay, show me. Well, we kind of finally sort of see it, specifically to the films. We kind of sort of see it here, and that's why back in 2005, I liked this one so much more than the other two, is because finally we get to the almost... practically the end of the Clone Wars, but we see the clone, we see the war, we see the turn, we see the this. So I like that. I like that Jimmy Smits is still hanging around as Bail Organa, Senator Bail Organa. I think that's cool, and obviously we know what's going to happen with him in the future, because he's going to be the adoptive father of... I don't know. Princess? Really? How did that happen? Okay.
I think his wife was the queen.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. But yes, episode 3. The plot, like you said, it's much more action-oriented, which is good. The story itself is okay. I like seeing Hayden act in this one. He's doing the best he can with the script fine. That he has. Yeah. Yeah, no. I'm saying he's doing the best he can with these lines, and I do think on this latest rewatch of Revenge of the Sith that he does really, really well. Like, he, and this is of course after I've watched every other Clone Wars, Bad Batch, whatever, Rebel. Well, he wasn't in Rebels, but was he in Rebels? No. Oh. I don't remember.
Well, people, I mean, Darth Vader was.
Oh yeah, that's true. So you know, I really dug it a lot more than I thought I would, and I still cringe though at the end of this, because I'm like, really? No. Shut up. Want.
I get what they were going for.
I get what they were.
I don't think they stuck the landing.
No. Poor James. And the funny thing is, Wikipedia points out that they did not credit James Earl Jones in this movie at all for apparently previously used dialogue. I could have sworn that was new dialogue.
When would James Earl Jones have said Padme?
Exactly, yes. That's what I'm saying. I could have sworn that was new dialogue.
Well, Wikipedia is the encyclopedia that can be edited by anyone.
True.
Including crazy people.
Very true, very true. What else about this one? What's your favorite moment out of this film? Like, if you had to isolate one thing, what's your favorite moment?
When they're on Grievous's big ship, command ship, mm-hmm. and it's falling apart, and like the whole thing tilts, and like we see R2 in the hangar bay, and like everything falls. I don't know. I think is kind of cool. I mean, like he ends up in this huge pile of broken droids. That was just a little bit I thought was neat.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, I literally just saw this last week. Like, I'm not even trying to diss Poor World. I tend to like the little things. So.
Okay.
I did like the fight in the Senate. I like that Palpatine's a crazy puffy faced monster man, and he's just happy to be like causing trouble. Like he almost falls to his death, and he's like, wee! Like yeah. I love him. He's so happy at being evil.
Yeah. And
like what the only issue I ever had. I love the series Andor. Mm-hmm. I love that it's grounded. I love that it's realistic. But it always kind of – there was always this little bit that I got hung up on is the idea that everything in that series that's very grounded, very realistic, very kind of, you know, cool, revolves around this puffy-faced monster man. Like – because the puffy-faced monster man.
Yes, yes, use your anger.
I mean, he looks like he's going to – When he's confronting when Anakin confronts him the first time,
yeah.
Man, he looks it looks like we're watching a different kind of movie.
Yeah,
movie.
Yeah, his transformation is.
No, I mean like the acting, like the acting before that, like when he's,
right,
like when he's just like, ooh, he is so excited that Anakin's pissed off, like yeah. Very excited.
But that's the beginning, like when.
Yeah, that is the beginning of it.
When he's talking to Anakin, we see him go from the senator we knew, even though we knew he was going to become what he becomes. In the first two movies of the prequels, he's senator. He's by the third movie, he's almost ready to just completely turn. And
he drops the mask.
Yeah, he pretty much drops the mask. And then literally Mace Windu lightning forces. Well, Mace doesn't do it, but... You know what I mean?
I always wondered, like, that always confused me. Because, I mean, Luke doesn't end up all messed up after being fried by lightning. So I always kind of wondered if it wasn't literally a mask. Like, if he kind of just sort of, like, it was an illusion or something, and he just kind of dropped it after being zapped.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I've always wondered.
I know that, the Emperor we see in the original trilogy, I know they wanted to kind of obviously line up to keep continuity to go with that and that kind of thing.
They just got lucky because they had cast a young actor and put him in makeup in Jedi, and then they could bring him back at the right age.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it shows, like, his full, I am fully evil now. I realized everything. I have whatever. I just am glad that eventually, close to the tail end of this movie, he completely drops Lord Vader. Not what I'm saying, but the way I'm saying it. Lord Vader. Like, there's a way... You do it fairly well, but there's a way Ian McDiarmid does it that's not the deep... When he first gets disfigured, it's kind of a deep voice. I like the more his normal Emperor Palpatine voice over the deep, dark voice. So I'm like, no, don't
do it. I get you, yeah.
Oh, man.
But he is, unquestionably, he's the best thing about the prequels. Like, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 3PO and R2 really didn't have much to do in this. I think The only thing, no, R2 flew in the second movie, didn't he?
He flew for like a couple seconds in this one.
Seconds in the beginning. That's
yeah,
right.
Because he uses his jets to ignite the oil that he sprayed all over the super battle droids.
Yep, that's right. What do you think of flying R2?
I am not the biggest fan, but I don't hate it. It's one of those things, and you got to go, well, what happened to the jets between the movies? Because there were several moments where it would have been really useful for him to have jets in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those. Someone says it gets broken somewhere. You're like, oh, okay.
Well, I think what it is that when Uncle Owen gets the two droids from the Jawas, and he tells Luke, go fix the droids, blah blah blah, do what you can. And they're messed up. At least they're made to look like they're messed up. And we take all the continuity into account.
But they're messed up from wandering around in the desert for like a couple hours. They're not like when they're on the Tanavi 4, they look fine. I mean, they're all shiny and new. It's just wandering around in the desert's not healthy for robots.
No.
And then he got shot and he got dumped in the I'm sure it's not the most sanitary place to be in a sand crawler.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, they look like crap, but they've been, you're not telling me at some point someone was like, hey, look, you got little jets in here, buddy. Boy, this would be useful. I don't know. It's just, the part of it is because Lucas wrote and directed these movies, there is no excuse for it.
Right.
Famously, there's a story that, he had to go back with a second unit and shoot a quick shot of Obi-Wan picking up Anakin's lightsaber. And he's like, oh, yeah, I forgot that he needs that for the next movie. It's just like, dude. I mean, famously, the thing that bothers me the most as a fan of the series and as someone who likes continuity is there's a moment in Return of the Jedi where Luke's like, tell me about your mother, your real mother. And Leia's like, well, she was very beautiful but sad. And he's like, I have no memory of my mother. But on that stupid space, on that mining station, Luke is the one that she holds.
Yeah.
And she dies. She never touches Leia.
Yeah.
So that whole thing makes no sense. I think part of that is supposedly Lucas did not get along with Natalie. And wanted her gone as quickly as possible. But, I mean, bring in what's-her-name from the Pirates movie who looks just like her. Just have one scene where she's like all sad and like works as a handmaiden at Castle Alderaan or something. I know Vader would have found her or some bullshit, but you're the one who wrote these movies.
Yeah.
You know where the puzzle pieces go. There's no excuse for that.
Yeah. There's absolutely no excuse for that at all. I do like how this sets up what is already had already come before it at the end with everybody going off into exile, even though the Yoda going to Dagobah thing was kind of a deleted scene. But, Obi-Wan taking Luke, Senator Organa taking Leia and all of that. So I thought that was a nice little way of kind of tying everything up.
Well, and also it also lightens the ending a little because it is literally the hope at the end, right?
Yeah.
Everything's falling apart, but we still have this hope.
Yep.
Everything's going to be okay. We know it's going to be okay because we've seen the movies, but the music swells and it's one thing about the prequels. There are two things about the prequels that I will always defend that I think were an absolute good. I love the toys. I love the soundtracks are so good. That was Williams at his best.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in the future we will be doing Star Wars music episodes here inside Studio 2009. I don't know exactly when we will be doing those, but we will be going back and specifically talking about the music itself. We're not going to have to re-talk about the movies because that's what we're doing now, but we are going to have separate music episodes to talk about the music because it's hard.
This is one of the things that I noticed about Ahsoka, the series. I know we're doing a thing on that, but it does tie in, because I noticed it during watching episode 3, is the music, because in a lot of movies, the music will come and go, And, you know, for dramatic moments, the music will kick in. Star Wars, the music is almost always there, like underlying every scene. And that's one of the things that Ahsoka gets right, or at least the early episodes did. Not every moment of every, you know, second, but like the music is very omnipresent in these films. It's almost like the lighting of the scene. It's like they lit the scene, and they scored the scene. It's such a huge, because you know everyone kind of knows that the music was a big part of the movies, but you watch it again and it's like it is so big a part of those movies. You know, I think it does a lot of the work that the directing should have done, you know, sort of, you know, conveying the emotions and the characters. And, you know, I mean, it's hard not to undersell how important that music is.
Absolutely. So I will bring this up way later, because all the music episodes of the podcast that we will do will be way in the future after we finish. Rise of whatever. But I will say this here and now, since I did click on the soundtrack, the way the tracks play in the film for Revenge of the Sith, Star Wars Revenge of the Sith theme, track 7, which is Grievous and the Droids, track 13, 2, 6, 5, 8, 4, 11, 10, 9, 3, 12, 14, and 15. So The Birth of the Twins is 14, and then A New Hope and End Credits is 15. I just absolutely love that. The one thing I do want to bring up really quick on the film itself, though, is, okay, maybe I'm reading too much into this, and that's more than fine, I guess, but where Obi-Wan and Grievous are fighting, first of all, Grievous has no lines in this entire, he's just grunting and coughing the entire time. Maybe he says one or two, like, but he doesn't have many lines like he had in the previous two films.
Grievous?
Yeah.
Grievous isn't in the previous two films.
He's only in that. Oh, that's right. Holy crap, he's only in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just...
Huh. Yeah, that's the thing, is it was like Maul was the aggressive Sith Lord.
Right.
Dooku was the fallen Jedi, and Grievous was the cyborg. They're all Darth Vader. You get it?
Yeah. Well, I get that they're all Darth Vader.
Well, they add up to Darth Vader.
So. Yeah, they add up to him. But, and I get it, if somebody tries to rip open your chest, you're going to be angry too, but I don't know.
The well, I scene feel like if all that's left of you is a couple of organs, maybe you shouldn't have a chest that could be pried open. That was one thing that kind of bothered me watching it. It was like so easy for him to like pull this. Like, first of all, why do you have what is it called? Bifracted? Why do you have a seam in the middle of your chest plate that you can get fingers into?
Mm-hmm.
Why not a solid breastplate?
Yes.
Why not a solid robot body? Did he really need to be crawling around like a crab so badly that you kept your two organs left like exposed?
Yeah.
Grievous was very poorly designed. Now, the thing is, I already know from seeing stuff about Vader that nerds have gone back and, well, you know, his body was built by the Trade Federation, and Dooku deliberately designed it so that he could be easily killed if he needed to be removed. See, the Emperor deliberately designed Vader's body, the armored suit, to be vulnerable to, like, Force lightning. Jesus Christ. Like, I love Star Wars, but oh my God, I got my Linux. It's like... Was it not? Was the lightning not enough? Like,
yeah.
The force suit was designed to limit Vader's powers. That's why Vader never overthrew the Emperor. It's like, Vader was planning on it. He was gonna. He had it on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
If Luke hadn't been a pussy, he might have gone for it.
Yeah. But I guess.
But I get what you're saying about Grievous. Like, yeah.
My problem with that scene is that Obi-Wan rips it open.
Yeah.
Grievous just kind of like glares at him, punches him, or does whatever he does. But like, it's like he touched his boob or something. And I'm like, wait, what? How's the half robot, half whatever else he is? How does that thing have feel? I don't understand. I just didn't understand. It was just weird.
I mean, he was another, because there's an action figure of it. He was another species, and he just basically got, like, whittled down to, like, I guess his head and, like, two squishy things in his chest.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was He was smacking Obi-Wan. Like, I kind of like that fight because I like that, like, Obi-Wan, every time Obi-Wan punched him, he was punching metal.
Yeah.
Like the Grievous was wiping the floor with him.
Yeah. No, I like the fight. It's just that one part of the fight where I just kind of, like, my brain goes into question mode. Like, I have so many, it's like another 90s movie that nobody likes. Questions, Mr. Wayne. So many questions. But it's just one. Oh, I see. You're making the noise of the. Yeah, got it.
Batman Forever.
Hey, it's better than the other one.
Okay, that's not hard.
True, but
I mean, actually, I liked it. I think most of the hatred for that movie is retroactively applied to it because of
the
Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
It's like suddenly everything that Schumacher touched was bad. Because I remember liking that film at the time. Like, I wasn't happy that they got rid of Keaton and they got rid of Billy Dee Williams. I thought that was kind of sad, but
yeah, absolutely. But yes, Revenge of the Sith. Anything else we want to say about it? Anything positive, negative, indifferent?
Another thing that I really like about the prequels in general, and that I. Because I know that there's this sort of meme about how the prequels have made – or the sequels have made the prequels look better. But I kind of buy into that. One of the things I love is all the – like I was – in the opening sequence, you get all these new spaceships, right? The Jedi have their little starfighters that are prototype TIE fighters. And then there's a V-Wing at the end. And then the clones have their really cool ARC 170, which was like – I saw that and I was like, I got to have the toy. It's so cool. Like all this cool shit. And then you get to the sequel trilogy and it's X-Wings and TIE fighters. Like it's like, you know, 20 years before Star Wars, they're flying these cool, weird, crazy things. And then 30 years after Star Wars, they're flying the same fucking things that they had before. They're slightly different, but it was just like, it's like I said, Lucas has his strengths. And I think one of the things is while it bothers me that he couldn't keep up with continuity properly, at the same time, he wasn't afraid to do his own thing, to not be not to be a slave to his own thing. Whereas obviously Abrams' whole thing is that he's slavishly devoted to Lucas. You know? Yep. And that's the problem I said earlier, like bringing in a writer who was a big fan of Star Wars. That's a double-edged sword because you can be like the sequel trilogy and have nothing new to offer because you're such a fanboy. And the reverse I always point out is the guy who wrote and directed Wrath of Khan. But one of the key guys writing who created Wrath of Khan had never seen Star Trek. Didn't like Star Trek. I mean, not he didn't like it, but he had no opinions of Star Trek.
Right.
They brought him in as a fresh person, and what he did was he sat down, and he watched all the shows. And he was like, well, which ones are the best ones? What about this show works? Like because every time they bring in someone who's like, I'm not a fan of this, the fans get angry, right?
Yeah. Oh,
you're bringing in an outsider. But that can give you a new if you come in with respect. That can give you a fresh perspective. Whereas, like, again, Abrams obviously loved Star Wars, but, like, just didn't have both the guts and the vision to push beyond what had come before, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that does make sense. And we're going to get to it, folks. We're three episodes away from the sequel trilogy. Three episodes of the podcast in general, not in a row. I don't know. So for me with Abrams, there's one thing two things that I know he's known for. The lens flare.
Yeah.
And the exploding heads. He always has a chip in somebody's head that explodes. So I'm wondering how many.
When did that happen in the Star Wars movies?
That's why.
Ironically, it was Anakin in episode one who had a chip in his head.
Mm. Well, that's what I'm wondering. After Mission Impossible 3, like when when you were talking about Wrath of Khan, are you talking about Nicholas Meyer, Jack B. Swords, or Harvey Bennett?
I think it's either Meyer or Bennett.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I just want to look
I'd have to go back and reread the story, but I know that one of them they brought in because the first movie made a lot of money, but it cost a lot of money.
Yeah,
the line was something like, "Can you make this movie for less than $30,000 or $30 million?" He was like, "God, yeah," because back then it was 1981. He was like, "Jesus, yeah." He was a TV guy, so it was maybe it was Bennett. He was a TV guy, and he sat down and he watched all those shows, and just like, this is what works. It's like I'm repeating myself now, but yeah, mm-hmm. Like I like that story because Wrath of Khan is actually my favorite movie of all time. So
very cool, very cool. Revenge of the Sith had a $113 million budget, and it made just over $868 million.
God. That's like, for 2003, that's, or 2005, that's obscene.
Yeah.
Like, they're making Marvel shit almost for that kind of money these days.
Yep.
But yeah, it almost made $1 billion. Well, it was, as bad as the prequels hurt the brand, they were still Star Wars.
Yep, absolutely. All right, folks, I think we're going to go to a quick ad break. We'll come back to close the show right after this.
ToyCast is back. We are talking toys once more here on the GeekCast Radio Network's Toy and Action Figure Podcast. From breaking into the display case to our toy topic talk and the brand new Origins in Toy Collections, where we get guests to tell us their toy story of how they got into toy collecting. ToyCast is the only toy podcast you will ever need. Find us on GeekCastRadio.com and any podcatching client you choose to use. Now go forth, transform and transcend your toy collecting today while listening to ToyCast.
Hi everyone, I'm here to tell you about the DC Comics News Podcast. Here every week to talk everything DC. Movies, TV, comics, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it. Here are a couple of our sponsors. Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast. It's audio justice. No. It's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am. Well, maybe you're both right. Regardless, you can catch us on every kind of podcast platform. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere you find great podcasts. So, can I go now? Let him go. He did everything you asked. No.
Hey, welcome to the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
A comic book podcast that actually talks about comics.
Yep, each week we open the shop up and read and discuss a comic.
Sometimes we pair that up with comic book movies or TV shows.
Or not. Lots of times it's just comic books and sound effects.
Oh, yes. Definitely lots of sound effects.
So tune in on all the major podcasting platforms to The Last Comic Shop Podcast. Or check out our library of evergreen shows at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe Podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe Podcast from the universe and beyond.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, folks, we are back here inside Studio 2009, Episode 66, Order 66, 12 months of Star Wars, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Now, one thing, we brought it up, like one little thing to mention we brought up, I think before we started recording, is, of course, famously, Return of the Jedi was originally titled Revenge of the Jedi.
Yep.
And then I think it was Gary Kurtz or Frank Marshall said, yeah, Jedi aren't the kind of people who seek revenge. So it was famously changed at the last minute. So it was kind of, for fans, it was a neat little thing that this one got to be the revenge movie, Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
It's like poetry, it rhymes.
Yep.
The famous Lucas quote. So I don't know who comes to these things, whether or not they might you know, they might not. Well, no, I'm just saying. I don't know. This could be old news. This could be new news. Something's always new news to somebody.
Yep. Do you have a Revenge of the Jedi poster in your house somewhere?
I have enough crap in my house that I've got to be worried about burglars that I am going to quietly not answer that question.
Okay, well, so that means he does, folks.
Yes, I have a
That's what I, yes, yes. Because
and it's a real one, too.
Oh, good. Yeah, those things.
It did not cost as much as I thought it would.
Okay, well, now you're just going to make me ask, how much did it cost?
$300.
Oh, well, that's not bad at all.
Ooh,
all right. I mean, for what it is, for the movie prop that it is, for something that didn't end up being called that, that's pretty damn good price. All right, folks, GCR and Universal Rating System, 0 to 5, what are you going to give Revenge of the Sith, sir?
No. I'm just like, I mean, it's the best. Okay, it's the best of the prequels, but I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Okay, I'm right there with you.
Because I think there's enough stuff I like about it that I want it to be a positive rating, but it's still a prequel.
Yep. Oh, trust me, I'm sure we will get way into the negative ratings.
Oh, after. My goodness. it's like we'll hit a peak with the next three episodes, and then, it goes down fast. Although, we're like, you know, spoiler alert for, you know,
later,
7 months from now, I kind of like Last Jedi. There are things about it that I like. Again, it's like the prequel where there are things about it that I like, but I don't think it was the overall package was handled well. And ironically, the things that I like about it are kind of the reason that Rise of Skywalker is a god-awful mess. So the overall narrative there is that Disney should have had a goddamn plan. Because that movie's so much more fun when you assume it's like a cliffhanger. Like Last Jedi is like a cliffhanger where like you assume that like the car's going over the cliff and the people who are riding the thing know how he's going to get out of the car. And then they're like, we have no idea how he's getting out of the car.
No idea.
Like, yeah. No idea. Like, oh, well, this makes the other movie less fun.
And I know we have on the Geekcast Radio Network, I know we have an episode from 2015 when Force Awakens came out somewhere on the website. I don't even know if it's still active on the website or not because it was in a podcast that we don't really do anything with anymore. So I don't know, whatever. Jumping over the original trilogy because we will be talking about it and we have talked about it in the past so much. On the network, I remember briefly. I barely remember what Force Awakens was. I know it's technically supposed to be.
It's Star Wars, didn't you?
Yeah,
did you watch A New Hope?
Yes.
And you've seen Force Awakens.
Yes, I remember some of Last Jedi. I remember nothing of Rise of Skywalker. So it's like I'm going in fresh with those three films, like. Actually paying attention to them. Like you said, Force Awakens is essentially Star Wars, you know, and that's fine. But the other two, like, I take that back. I remember seeing young beard, and only because I have the Funko Pop, young bearded Luke and old man Luke. Those are the two things I remember from Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. I think the only other thing I remember, and this is a tertiary opinion at best, Finn got a raw deal.
Oh, my. Like, no, you don't understand. Like, there's this narrative, which I resent, that Star Wars fans are racist and got mad that a black person was cast in a Star Wars movie. If you've ever seen the movie Attack, I think it's either Attack the Block or Attack of the Block. It's a British film. It's like it's a homage to classic 80s monster movies. Have you seen it?
I doesn't ring
100% recommend. John Boyega is in that. He is fucking amazing. And when I heard he was cast in that in Force Awakens, I was out of my mind happy. Because whatever else you say about J.J. Abrams, and I will say a lot when the time comes, the dude should have been a casting agent because he's a genius at casting actors. And he's actually a good director. He's just not a good writer. Again, know your skill set. He's not a good writer, but he's great at casting and directing. Boyega is fantastic, and he is so utterly failed by what he was given to do in the Star Wars movies. Like, it is depressing, like, how talented this kid is, this young man is, because Attack of the Block was a long time ago now.
Yeah, but Attack of the Block was 2011.
Okay, that's like 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, yeah, it's a long time ago. Good. Like, again, do yourself a favor and listen to me about these movies. You need to watch these movies, man. They're good.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia article right now to make sure I can file it away for later. Absolutely. I'm not dismissing your recommendation at all. I was trying to make sure I had the correct information.
You haven't gotten back to me on RRR yet.
RRR. Well, we're doing Star Wars, man.
Look, RRR is better than the last three Star Wars movies combined. And it has Baylan, who's the only good thing from Ahsoka, and it has Allison Doody from Last Crusade. So there's Lucasfilm connections.
There you go.
And it's sort of apparently based on a real thing, which is weird because it's very action adventure-y. It's a Star Wars movie. It's not a Star Wars movie. It's a Marvel movie without being a Marvel movie. It's amazing. Like I will not shut up about it. I love it so much. Although it's like 9 hours long, so like you got to be prepared.
Oh, so it's longer than the Batman. Okay.
No, it's only like 3 hours long, but it's kind of broken up. Like there's a part where you can go take a break and take a bathroom and then come back to it. So, but man, I'll stop. Revenge of the Sith, 3.5. It's the best prequel. Stuff happens. It has consequences. It has weird little. I mean, there's the little joke about mind wiping 3PO, which still doesn't explain why R2 doesn't know anything.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like the pieces don't connect properly, and as I said, that's weird because the same guy's making these movies. Like you would think they would mesh perfectly. A lot of cool stuff. A lot of bad stuff. The prequels are a mixed bag. Retrospectively, I guess I'm glad he made them. Like, I mean, at least we know the story now.
Yeah.
What I always say about the sequel trilogy and the prequel trilogy has a story to tell, and it's not necessarily told in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And the sequel trilogy does not have a story, but it's told in a very sort of slick, well-produced kind of like it's cool. I know we were on another podcast. I was complaining about like Michael Bay and who's the guy that everybody stands for, even though his movies are terrible.
Oh,
Snyder. Like it looks cool. It's very slickly produced. It's well directed and well cast. But like, there is no story to it because they didn't have a story. They didn't have a plan. So it's like, on the one hand, you've got, and in the end, I think I prefer a story that is interesting and compelling that may not necessarily be told in the best of ways.
Absolutely. And I am just realizing, like, I knew one thing she did, but I just realized, yeah, Allison Doody, I love her a lot. Because there are at least three films where I'm like, oh, I remember her now. I'm sure you know this. I did not know this because I do not remember this. But her film debut was in A View to a Kill as Jenny Flex.
Honestly, I only know her from Last Crusade.
Last Crusade.
I got to look this up. Although I never saw A View to a Kill. I'm not a big James Bond guy. Well, I like the old. I'm an old man, and I like my old James Bond.
Well, this was Roger Moore, 85.
I know it was. I know what it was.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
I was 14. I've seen the Duran Duran video, sir.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm aware Christopher Walken is Zorn. I'm aware that Grace Jones is in it. I'm aware a blimp is somehow involved.
So the other reason why I love her, besides the crazy Nazi lady she plays
She's Austrian. She's Austrian.
Okay.
Not everybody in wartime Germany was a Nazi.
Okay, well.
She just burned a few books, and, you know, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. She was also, and most people will not care about this other than me, she was Anne-Marie Athos in the TV movie Ring of the Musketeers, starring David Hasselhoff and Cheech Marin with John Rhys-Davies, along with Corbin Burnson. So I can tell.
Oh my God.
There is no direct Wikipedia article for Ring of the Musketeers, but I know this movie by heart.
That movie sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not even completely facetious. It's like, wow, that's one hell of a cast.
How do you feel about the overall Musketeer thing?
I am supremely indifferent to it.
Okay.
I'm aware it exists.
Okay, but you're not a fan, but you don't hate it. Okay.
Oh, I don't hate it, no.
Got it, okay. So, Ring of the Musketeers, Hasselhoff is D'Artagnan, she is Athos.
Oh.
Rhys-Davies is... Oh.
Porthos? Was Athos, Porthos, and D'Artagnan?
Yeah, and Aramis, but I'm
saying... I forgot about Aramis. The only reason I know Porthos is because that was Archer's dog.
I think Thomas Gottschalk was Porthos. I'm going to have to look it up on IMDb. But basically, she's Athos. The Hoff is D'Artagnan. Cheech Marin is Aramis.
That is casting.
Yeah, that is. John Rhys-Davies plays the guy that sends them out on mission. I forget.
Come on, I don't know who the Q of not Q, the M of the freaking Musketeers is. That's a little deep lore for me, buddy.
But yeah, it was a made-for-TV movie from 1992, and I just growing up with Knight Rider and
he was Maurice Treville.
You're right. There you go. Wow, you found it faster than I did.
And Russ Armstrong was a skeptical kid.
But yes, Star Wars because we
Star Wars. Oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah, Star Wars. Yes.
Thing.
3.5 all around. Absolutely. Coming up next, Inside Studio 2009, my buddy Mike Laidman and I are going to do a 25th anniversary episode all about Metal Gear Solid, the PlayStation era of the Metal Gear franchise, since that is turning 25 this year. After that, we've got a couple episodes in December. December, people will be able to hear us talk about Andor Season 1. So that'll be that. And in January of next year, we've got – I'm actually breaking my rule in doing 2 Star Wars episodes in 1 month. So it's longer. It's going to be longer than 12 months. We're going to do Solo and Rogue One.
Well, it is my birthday month. So.
Oh, there you go.
Star Wars for my birthday. And one of those is pretty good.
Yes.
And,
we'll get to it.
No. I'm like, I'm actually interested to rewatch Solo because I remember it was a weird time in my life and I couldn't really focus on the movie too much. Mm-hmm. So I remember kind of liking it, so I'm kind of interested to revisit it. I've revisited Rogue One a couple times. And still fucking love it, but Solo, I'm down for that. This is one of the things I agreed to do this because I'm like I kind of want to go back and revisit this stuff,
And I offer the opportunity to do so because that's just what I do. Thank you for joining us here inside the studio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts. Leave us reviews, please. Spotify and, of course, any other podcasting client you choose to use. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Yes, iTunes is still a thing if you're an Apple user or a non-Apple user. Follow us on X at GeekCastRadio for the network at It's Studio 2009, all one word. For the show, I'm at TFG and Mike. Dave doesn't do X.
I'm a man of mystery.
Yes.
Well, and apparently they're going to charge for it now, so yeah.
If it's already been free for X number of years, you shouldn't be charging for X.
You said the same.
I know, right? Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can also check out Studio 2009 Podcast over there, as well as joining the Toy World Order fans group. Join us next time. As I mentioned, 25th anniversary Metal Gear Solid PlayStation 1, the good old days. My buddy Mike Ladenman and I will be here talking about that. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
David Draper.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
It's not enough anymore. Like, it's got to tell a compelling story. And I'm convinced this one's going to end in a wet fart of a cliffhanger.